Blessing and Punishment, Chapter 94, 2 Kings 6 and 7. Ben-Hadad, the king of Syria, paces with long strides back and forth in his palace. Sometimes he stamps his feet in anger. "How is it possible?" he mumbles. "Again and again our plans fail. It seems as though the king of Israel knows what we have decided to do here." Suddenly a thought flashes through his mind. The blood rushes to his head, and he clenches his fists. "If that is true," he grumbles threateningly, then, he calls one of his courtiers and commands him to call his generals and officers. The courtier obeys. Why is the king of Syria so angry? He is waging war against Joram, the king of Israel. He consults with his generals and officers what should be done. They make plans together. They decide to go to a certain place in the land of Israel. From there, they will try to subdue the entire country. Everything is made ready. The Syrian army marches to the designated place within the land of Canaan. But it is unsuccessful. King Joram has taken countermeasures against him. The Syrian army is driven out of the land. Ben-Hadad, the king of Syria, with his servants, again makes other plans. They shall hide an army in the field. When Joram passes that place, they will fall upon him and capture him. It is a splendid plan which must succeed. So they attempt it in this way the second time. But again, they fail. It seems as though Joram knew all about the plans. A third time Ben-Hadad with the officers of his army makes plans, and a third time it also fails. Ben-Hadad stamps his feet and is irritated. What is going on? With long strides he walks back and forth, thinking about this puzzle. Could one of his men be a betrayer? That is why he has sent his courtier to summon his generals and officers to the palace. Soon thereafter, the palatial room is filled with army officers. With a dejected and searching gaze, Ben-Hadad looks from the one to the other. All of them are silent and wait until their king speaks. "Who among you is helping Joram, the king of Israel? It cannot be anything else but that there is treachery in our midst. Our splendid plans fail every time. I am positively sure that Joram is being warned. But the great question is, by whom? I must find that out." He is silent. With piercing eyes, he looks at each of his servants. They too are silent. What answer must they give? A traitor in their midst? That is scarcely possible. Still, it is a riddle. Suddenly, one of the officers says, "My lord the king, I know what is taking place. There isn't a traitor among us. But the prophet Elisha warns the king of Israel. Elisha knows exactly everything that we talk about in secret. And Elisha tells Joram, the king of Israel." Ben-Hadad looks at the speaker with great astonishment. In anger, he cries out, "Where does that prophet live? We will go to capture him." He is quickly informed. Elisha is at Dothan, a city which lies within a few hours' walk to the northeast of Samaria. Ben-Hadad immediately gives orders. An army is quickly gathered together and marches on the road toward Dothan to capture the prophet and bring him to Syria. Slowly, dawn appears in the east. It is still very early in the morning. Most of the inhabitants of Dothan are still asleep. The servant of Elisha is already up. He opens the door of the house and walks outside. In terror, he stands still, and stares into the valley with a frightened expression on his face. Now you must know that Dothan was built upon a mountain. From this mountain one could see far in all directions. The servant of Elisha looks about in this early morning hour, but what he sees causes him to turn pale. And it is no wonder that this young man is so alarmed, because the entire mountain is encircled by a mighty army. They are the Syrians. He sees horses and chariots all around the city. It is impossible to get through them. They are lost. They are caught as a rat in a trap. With great haste, he returns into the house and calls Elisha. "Master, oh master, what must we do?" he says tremblingly. He stares at his master helplessly. However, Elisha is not at all frightened by this news. He already knows what has happened. The Lord has made it known to him. Calmly he answers, "Fear not, for they that be with us are more than they that be with them. We are not alone. We have mighty helpers." His servant looks at him in amazement. "With us? There are more than with them, and no one can be seen except the multitude of soldiers. What does Elisha mean?" The servant cannot understand what he means. Elisha sees the bewildered, unbelieving expression on his face, and he smiles. "Lord," he prays, "open the eyes of my servant so that he can see what I see." This prayer is answered. The Lord causes Elisha's servant to see what the prophet meant. The entire mountain is covered with horses and chariots of fire. Ben-Hadad sent a large army to capture Elisha, but Israel's God sends a heavenly host to protect his servant. This host of angels is between Elisha and the Syrians. Therefore, Elisha is not afraid. And now that Elisha's servant also sees them, his fear leaves him. A little later, Elisha leaves his home and goes to the enemy. He again prays to the Lord. He asks, "Smite this people with blindness." The Lord answers Elisha's prayer. The Syrian soldiers see him coming, but they do not recognize him. In a little while, Elisha stands by them. He says to them, "You are mistaken. Go with me. I will bring you to the man whom ye seek." Thankfully, the Syrians accept the unexpected help. Elisha leads them, and he brings them into the center of Samaria. The strangeness of it is that the Syrians do not realize it. It is as if the Syrian soldiers are really blind, but they are not. Oh no, they can see as usual, but are not aware of the place where Elisha is bringing them. You still know, boys and girls, that the inhabitants of Sodom sought to harm Lot, but they could not find the door. They too were smitten with blindness. The same thing happened here. The Syrians see the roads, the trees, and the houses. To them, everything looks as usual. Still, Elisha stands still in the midst of Samaria, which is the capital of Israel, their enemy. "Now open their eyes, Lord," Elisha asks. Suddenly, the Syrian soldiers see that they have walked into a trap. The army of Israel, under the leadership of their king Joram, already has surrounded them. "Shall I smite them? Shall I smite them, my father?" Joram asks quickly. Why, no, Elisha answers calmly. You must not slay them. Prepare a meal for them. Give them bread and water, and let them return to their own country. Soldiers whom you take as captives in battle are not slain by you, are they? Joram does as Elisha tells him. The Syrian soldiers eat and drink. Then Joram lets them go. Completely startled and ashamed, the Assyrians leave the city of their enemies and return to their own native land. There they tell what has happened to them. For the present, the bands of Syrians do not come into the land of Israel. The Lord was very good to Joram. He had a great deal of patience with him. O Joram, forsake your sins and worship the Lord and him only. Even though it is true that Joram is not as wicked as his father Ahab and his brother Ahaziah, he worships the golden calves, which Jeroboam, the first king over the kingdom of the 10 tribes, set up in Dan and Bethel. It is true, Joram did not worship Baal. He even put away the image of Baal which his father Ahab had made. But he worships those terrible golden calves. The Lord blesses Joram in a special way. God is merciful and long-suffering, in order that he also would forsake the golden calves. But alas, Joram does not do it. What a pity! The inhabitants of Samaria are in great distress. The gates are closed and watchmen are on the walls day and night. The enemy is encamped outside the city, and they are lying in wait to conquer Samaria. The city is besieged. The enemy? What enemy? The Syrians, under the leadership of Ben-Hadad their king, have surrounded the capital of Israel. What? The Syrians again? Did Ben-Hadad begin all over again? Yes, children. The thankfulness of the Syrian king did not last long. The kingdom of Israel shall and must be destroyed. Therefore he has mustered his entire army and has gone up to Samaria. If the capital falls, then the entire kingdom will fall. Wretched city! A mighty enemy lies in wait around the city, but a greater enemy has come inside the city. That enemy is famine. Food is getting scarce, and no additional food can be brought within the city. The Syrians will see to it that the food will not come in. Soon the besieged city is in a state of misery. The most loathsome food is eaten. The head of a donkey is sold for a large sum of money, and you know that a donkey is an unclean animal. The Israelites are not allowed to eat that meat, but alas, because of the dreadful famine, they will eat anything. Even the dung of doves is sold for a high price. The people become weak and thin from lack of food. If this must continue for a long time, they will have to give up the city. Otherwise, they will all die from starvation. A man is walking on the walls of Samaria. He is Joram, the king. He is going to see what the watchers are doing, whether they are doing their duty. Deep in thought, he walks onward. Suddenly, he hears someone calling, "Help, my lord, O king!" When he looks up, he sees a woman standing in front of him. The king pulls up his shoulders and dismally answers, "Woman, the Lord does not help you. Neither can I help you. What must I give you, wheat or wine? I have neither." Joram thinks that she wants to ask him for food. However, he notices afterward that she did not intend to do so, and he asks, "What is the trouble? What do you want?" Then the woman tells him something which is so terrible that I hardly dare tell you, children. She and another woman lived together in the same house. They each had one son. Because of the gnawing hunger, they made a horrible agreement with each other, and they would kill their children and eat them. The one day they would kill and eat the one child, and the following day the other boy would be killed. Dreadful, isn't it? How is it possible that mothers could kill and eat their own children? Oh, they came to this agreement because of the terrible famine. The son of the one woman already had been eaten. Now that woman demands the other mother to slay her child. Wasn't that the agreement? But the other woman refused. For that reason, the deceived woman calls to the king for help. She wants Joram to force the other woman to keep the agreement and likewise kill her child. The king is deeply affected when he hears this narrative. He rends his clothing. The people can see that he is wearing sackcloth underneath his top clothing. This is a sign of mourning. Suddenly the king calls out, "God do so and more also to me, if Elisha the prophet shall not be killed this day." Oh, what does he mean? What does Elisha have to do with that? Children, Joram became so terribly angry with the Lord, the God of Israel, that he seeks revenge. The Lord permitted the distress to become so great that those horrifying things happened in the besieged city. Joram will have nothing to do with God anymore. Neither will he have anything to do with Elisha, the prophet of the Lord. Therefore, he wants to kill Elisha. "No, King Joram, the Lord is not the cause of all this misery. The fault lies with you. Because you will not worship the Lord, but reverence the golden calves, therefore the Lord is punishing you and your people. Besides, he is very ungrateful. Is this the thanks for all that Elisha had done for him?" Joram rebels against God. He does not humble himself. No, he resists the Almighty God. He sends a messenger to the house of Elisha to kill the faithful prophet. Elisha is sitting in his home. However, he is not alone at this time. The elders of the city of Samaria are visiting him. They talk together about the unbearable famine which prevails in Samaria. They will not be able to endure it much longer. The messenger who must kill Elisha is approaching. Oh, will the faithful servant of God be murdered? No, boys and girls. The Lord will take care of his servant. The Lord warned Elisha and made known to him what Joram's plans are. Suddenly, Elisha says to his guests, "Someone will come here shortly. He has been sent by the king to murder me. Be sure you do not let him in. The king will follow shortly." As soon as he had said this, the door is thrown open and a man steps inside. But the elders of Samaria take hold of this intruder and force him to go out on the street. A little later, Joram appears. He wants to see if Elisha is slain. No, Joram, God watches over Elisha, and your wicked plan is unsuccessful. The king also notices that. Oh, the king cries out, the Lord permits all this great misery. Even mothers kill their own children and eat them. I need not hope upon the Lord any more. He will not help us anyway. Then Elisha answers, King, the Lord will surely help. There shall be deliverance. Yes, even very shortly. Tomorrow, about this time, the famine will be past. Tomorrow, there will be plenty of flour and barley sold in the gates of Samaria. A mocking laugh is heard. An officer of the army who came with the king does not believe Elisha's words. He mocks with the word of the Lord. That is impossible, he says unbelievingly. And scornfully he adds, then the Lord will have to make windows in heaven and let flour and corn rain. Otherwise, it cannot be. Oh no, Elisha asks, while he looks at him piercingly. You think that cannot happen? You shall see that I have spoken the truth, but you shall not eat of it. That shall be his punishment for his mocking and unbelief. On the evening of this same day, when it is beginning to get dark, four men sneak with pounding hearts toward the tents of the Syrians. They dare not talk loudly, but they whisper. They are four lepers, four miserable men who know that they must die from that dreadful disease. In Israel, lepers were not permitted to live with their families. No, they must go to a remote place far away from all other people. There they must live in solitude. They were unclean. Everyone shunned them because leprosy was very contagious. These four lepers had their dwelling somewhere outside the city of Samaria. But when the Syrians came and besieged Samaria, they came closer to the city for fear of the enemy. They lived near the outside of the wall, because they were not allowed to come into the city. They too are hungry. Their portion of food becomes smaller. At last, they have nothing left. Finally, they said one to another, really, why do we remain here? Let us go away. Hunger prevails in the city. If we try to get into the city, it will do us no good, because we also will die there from starvation. Do you know what we should do? Let us go to the Syrians. Probably they will spare us and give us food. Then we shall save our lives. If they kill us, there is nothing to be done about it. Here we will perish from hunger and want. They wait for the darkness to come because the watchmen on the walls of Samaria are not allowed to see them go. They would probably think they were betrayers. When it is very dark, they go on the way and cautiously approach the Syrian army. However, one thing seems so strange to them. It is so quiet, so very quiet. Not the slightest sound do they hear. They come to the first tent. Carefully they raise the canvas a little and peek inside. They see nothing and hear nothing. They risk it and go inside. My, how strange! The tent is empty. They soon notice that every tent is empty. Not one Syrian soldier is to be seen. Where are all those thousands of soldiers? Yes, children, That is a wonderful story. The Syrians fled.
Fled? For whom?
The Syrian soldiers heard a sound far in the distance, as if a great army was approaching. They could hear plainly the rattling of many chariots and the rumbling footsteps of many thousand soldiers.
Oh, they say to each other, Joram, the king of Israel, surely has made a league with some other king, probably with the king of Egypt or with other monarchs, and they are coming with their armies to deliver the children of Israel.
They made each other afraid and fled in haste. They left everything behind, their tents, their food, and even their horses and donkeys were left behind. When it began to get dark, they fled in wild confusion.
Was there really a mighty army approaching?
Why, no.
In the Bible we read that the Lord had made them hear a noise as if a great army were coming. But it only seemed so. That is the reason the four leprous men found all the tents empty. They enter one tent, and they see food on the table. As ravenous wolves, they fall upon the food and eat until they cannot eat any more. They also discover gold, silver, and beautiful clothing. They take it and return to their own homes near the wall of Samaria and hide it there. They can make good use of that. They sneak into the tents of the Syrians the second time. They plunder as much gold and silver as it is possible to carry and hide it again. Suddenly they stand still and say to each other, "We really are doing wrong. We only are thinking of ourselves and not of our brethren in the city. Let us quickly tell them that the Syrians have fled. They surely will be glad. Besides, by tomorrow morning it will be known, and then they may punish us because we did not tell them immediately. We may no longer conceal it."
In haste, they run to the gate and call at the top of their voices that the Syrians have fled. Even though it is night, the news is soon known in the city. The inhabitants of Samaria awaken each other. The king also hears it, but he doesn't believe that the Syrians are gone for good. He thinks it is a stratagem. This means a trick of the enemy. "They know," he says, "that we are famished. They have gone away for a short distance and have hidden themselves in the fields close by. If we go to their tents outside the city to get some food, they shall suddenly take us by surprise and we will be defeated." He surely does not remember what Elisha had prophesied, or he doesn't want to think of it. Whatever it is, he does not trust it. One of his servants answers, "That can be investigated. Let a few of our men go look." Joram agrees with this proposal. Two Israelite soldiers leave the city on horseback and go toward Jordan. In anxious suspense, the others await their return. Would they return? Finally, these messengers return, and their faces beam with gladness and cheerfulness. "It is true," they inform the king. "There is no possibility of a mistake. We have been as far as Jordan. The whole way is strewn with weapons, clothing, and other utensils. The Syrians threw them away so they could flee more rapidly. Ben-Hadad, with his entire army, has fled in haste." Oh, who can say what went on in the hearts of those thin, exhausted people? It really is too good to be true. As soon as it becomes daylight, the gates are opened and the famished people rush out of the gates to obtain food from the tents.
They push each other in order to get out quickly. Suddenly, a cry of distress is heard. Joram gave an officer of the army orders to stand at the gate so that no accidents would happen due to the pressure of the crowd. He tried to keep the people back a little, but it is just impossible. This officer is pushed irresistibly to the side. Accidentally, he falls. The first ones try to stand still, but it is impossible. They are pushed forward by those in the rear. Whether they want to or not, they must go ahead. By so doing, they trample upon the hapless officer, and he dies. When finally the people pass through, and there is a little opening, the body of the officer can be seen lying in the middle of the gate. Who is it? It is the same officer who on the previous day had mocked with the words of Elisha. The punishment which Elisha foretold came upon him. He did see that deliverance came, but he had no benefit from it, because he was trampled upon by the joyous people. Terrible, isn't it? This was surely a painful death. Boys and girls, learn from this that when the Lord is mocked, he will not let it go unpunished. We too will be punished if we do so.